We are here today celebrating the life and music of the great drummer Edgar Bateman Jr., who lived in Philadelphia for many, many years and was an important part of Philadelphia's jazz community, a mentor to many younger musicians, as we heard directly a little while ago from saxophonist Maxfield Gast. We'll have another caller in a little while to share some more thoughts about Edgar Bateman. But for now, we're going to move along to the next studio album that Edgar Bateman appeared on. This is 7 years later, 2008, so just a couple years ago. This one, a trio album under the leadership of alto saxophonist Bobby Zankel. The album is called Many in Body, One in Mind, and it was released on the CIMP label. It features Dylan Taylor on bass and, of course, Edgar Bateman Jr. on drums. All of the compositions on this album are written by Bobby Zankel, with one exception, which is a tune written by Edgar Bateman himself. More on that later. For now, we're going to hear one of Bobby Zankel's compositions entitled Observing the Mind. Bobby's Ankles, Observing the Mind, here on Lucky Old Souls, the special Edgar Bateman Jr. tribute edition of Lucky Old Souls, that from the 2008 Bobby's Ankle Trio album entitled Many in Body, One in Mind. Bobby's Ankle on alto sax, Dylan Taylor on bass, and Edgar Bateman on drums. As I said before, all of the tracks on this album are Bobby Zankel compositions, with one exception, which is an Edgar Bateman composition. And as far as I know, this is the only recorded example of an Edgar Bateman composition. This is the composition that Kevin Deal and Elliot Levin were talking about a few hours back, if you were listening then. They both were talking about a concert sometime in the mid-90s at the Painted Bride when Edgar Bateman performed this composition. It is called Journey to Life, and as I said, it is the only recorded example of an Edgar Bateman composition that I am aware of, but I'm fairly certain that Edgar Bateman had a lot more compositions. Unfortunately, I guess most, if not all of them, were never recorded, and I'm not even sure how many of them were performed live, but I do know when I got to know Edgar last summer, he was talking about how much he was composing. He was very serious about his composing. He had studied composition. He told me that he was working on some religious work, some spiritual compositions. And I don't know what came of those. I don't know how far along they got. So for now, at least, this is the only recorded example we have of one of Edgar Bateman's compositions. So this is a real treat. So this is one you really want to, if you're able to, you know, if you don't have things you absolutely have to be doing now, this is one you really want to just sit back and dedicate 100% of your attention to this. It's, excuse me for a second, sorry. I forgot which player I was working with here, which CD player. I do apologize. Right, this is Edgar Bateman's Journey to Life from the 2008 Bobby Zankel record, Many in Body, One in Mind. Bobby Zankel on alto sax, Dylan Taylor on bass, and Edgar Bateman Jr. on the drums. We'll be right back. Edgar Bateman Jr.'s journey to life here on Lucky Old Souls, the special Edgar Bateman Memorial Program. That is, as I said before, the only recorded example of an Edgar Bateman Jr. composition, as far as I know. This is from the 2008 Bobby Zankel Trio release, Many in Body, One in Mind. Bobby Zankel on alto sax, Dylan Taylor on bass, and of course, the composer and the man we are celebrating today, Edgar Bateman Jr. on the drums. Before we continue and move on to the very last appearance of Edgar Bateman on record, we have another caller on the line. We have saxophonist Victor North. Let me just flip my switches here, and Victor should be with us. Victor North, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Great. Thank you so much for calling, Victor.
My pleasure.
So, share some thoughts on Edgar Bateman. Maybe start with when you first came into contact with him.
Okay. I thought of all kinds of other stuff, but
okay. Well,
that's
you
hard to think of.
You can. You know what, Victor? You start wherever you want to start.
Well, Edgar was such an amazing person and musician. He just brought so much experience of all kinds to the bandstand and just to the room when we were just hanging out and just listening to his anecdotes and stories. He had a ton of great stories, some about himself and some about some of the other musicians that he had come in contact with throughout his career. Of course, watching him play was just an amazing thing. He was super graceful. That's what was coming into my mind listening to the recordings you're playing, is just the way he moved. His arms were just kind of circling around like wings on a bird sometimes. And he could just do anything. He would play so melodically sometimes. And as much as he played, it was funny how, I mean, he could lose you in a second if he wanted to, but you could really just get into all kinds of things with him and just feel really relaxed and like you knew exactly where you were, because he just phrased in such a special way as a musician. And as a person, he was just so warm and just really... just a generous spirit, super funny guy, tons of great stories. I knew that he had the nickname Biscuit as a young musician.
That's the first time hearing that. Interesting.
Yeah, he was with a band leader that came up with that name. It had something to do with the way Edgar played his drum rolls. The guy would turn around and say, those rolls, they sound like biscuits. Some sound like rolls, they sound like biscuits. So we get
Interesting. Is this back when he was in St. Louis still, or you're not sure?
I think it was.
Okay.
Yeah. Back in his hometown.
He
had some other great stories. He used to like to talk about his association with John Coltrane. And apparently Coltrane called him Batman. Because of his last name, of course. And he called Coltrane Coal Truck. And I'll never forget the day that I said we had been joking around and we have been coming up with nicknames for famous musicians. We've been calling a bass player Ron Carpenter and some saxophone player got called John Coleslaw. And the look on Edgar's face was so startling. His eyes just got huge, and you could see he just had regret for not being able to use that one. At the time, he was, I gotta call John Coltrane John Coleslaw. Yeah, it's pretty funny.
That's great. Yeah.
Yeah, but one of the most amazing stories I have about Edgar that I really wanted to share with you was on a gig that we did And there was a period of time where we worked together a lot. We had a band with the organist Kyle Kohler, who's in New York these days. And we played at this club, and we were just about to play. And we were running a little bit behind schedule, and he was all set, finally, and he looked great, had an impeccable suit on, I was counting off the tune. One, two, Victor. And he's looking around, he's looking on both sides of the drum, he says, Victor, I hate to tell you this, but, my stick bag, I don't seem to have my stick bag. So we're all set up and he has no sticks. And I had been his ride to the gig, and I'm thinking, oh boy, we weren't that close to his house. So I went in the kitchen to see if they had any chopsticks. And they did. So I got a couple of packages of chopsticks. And Edgar was pretty amused by the whole situation once he got over his embarrassment. And I told him, no, it's fine. As long as you can make do with these until we can go home and get your sticks. So he played with those chopsticks, and it was one of the most amazing things I ever heard. And people were freaking out, just like walking by, like, hey, wait a minute. That guy is tearing up the drums, and is he playing with chopsticks? I mean, it was kind of quiet, but he played everything that he usually would. It was amazing.
Wow.
In fact, I don't think we went home for the stick bag, and he played the whole gig with the chopsticks.
Mm. That's incredible. I'm just sort of sitting here with my mouth wide open. That's amazing.
Huh. It was really amazing, yeah.
Wow.
His musicianship and his deep sense of swing and melody and rhythm was just like second to none. I mean, he was just a super gift to music and to the people that were lucky enough to hear him and be around him.
Yeah, yeah. Can you tell me a little more about this band you had with him?
Yeah, it was an organ trio most of the time. Occasionally we had a guitar player or two. And also Dawood El-Bakara played with us, a great local trumpet player,
mm-hmm.
Sometimes. And unfortunately, we did not record in the studio. I do have a VHS tape of us playing at Sound of Market Records. I have that somewhere. I'm going to have to dig that out and get it transferred to.
Yeah. Can you talk at all about what it was like to solo with Edgar playing behind you?
Well, yeah. It was... The thing that comes to mind is just, I just had so much motion, so much forward motion, and yet really supported feeling, like a big cushion that somehow had a huge engine under it that was just going to pick you up and take you somewhere. Like a magic carpet of some kind. And like I said before, his sense of phrasing was such that even if you started to lead yourself in a direction you weren't sure of, he knew, he could hear where you were going usually and where the music still was at the center. And he had a really great way of making things relevant and playful and make sense. So playing with him was just a super treat.
Do you remember the last time you played with him?
I do. I feel like I can still hear his drums just clearly in my head. It was at Chris's Jazz Cafe, and I'm trying to think he might not have been on the gig the last time I played with him there. I think he had come by and was hanging out and sat in. I know I had him on the gig sometime in the last year, and when my regular drummer, Wayne Smith Jr., couldn't make it. And then, I had an opportunity coming up, actually it's tonight, that I had been thinking about giving him a call. I knew it was coming up, like in the last couple weeks. Wayne is actually playing with Sun Ra tonight.
That's right, yeah.
So he won't be on the gig at Chris's. But I was hoping to... I would love to get Edgar on that gig whenever I could, because not everybody knew about him, because he wasn't as active as he once was in town. And I used to love it when the college students, you know, some of the local drummer students would be in the audience, and they hadn't experienced Edgar, and he would come up and just start to freak people out just with his musicality and prowess. Just people were like, what is that? What is going on? You know, and surprises for those guys.
Yeah. Did you ever talk to Edgar about, you know, what he felt about playing at jam sessions and playing behind younger musicians? Because I know one of the sort of recurring themes that I've heard from people I've talked to is just how supportive he was of younger musicians. So, you know, what did it mean to him to play at a jam session behind all these kids who, you know, maybe were 20 years old and didn't even know who he was?
Well, that was one of the unique things about Edgar. He was open to anything and anybody, really, musically, seemed to be. And, you know, he was always looking for the opportunity, his best. And, you know, making music out of whatever was going on, you know. And I think he felt, as he would say, sometimes he had played with the greatest phone players ever in the world, you know. In jazz, anyway, and he played with them all. So the things that he didn't see opportunities. You know, he didn't get grumpy about playing with people that maybe weren't quite ready. You know, he would get frustrated if the whole night went like that, I think. But he had he was a great sport about that stuff, and he didn't get mad at people that way, that I saw anyway. That wasn't my experience with him. He was really patient and supportive. And I know he was with me, because I've heard him play in so many different settings. I know when I first got together with him, you know, I wasn't as confident, and he just really, you know, he made me feel comfortable, and then when we started getting more comfortable, you know, he would start to stretch more. But he was just like a really patient, supportive guy.
Anything else you want to add before I get to some more music?
Well, yeah, there was one other thing.
Sure. No.
And as many times as I took Edgar to his home and to gigs in my car, there was one time where he drove to a gig we had in Newark. Actually, it was with Kyle in Oregon and Julian Presley, the, you know, great alto player from Philly, who's now up in New York, I believe, North Jersey somewhere. So we had this gig in Newark, and Edgar drove. That was the one time he ever drove, and I've never been so scared in a car in my entire life. It was as comfortable as I've ever been on the bandstand with him was exactly how uncomfortable I was in the car. And I really wasn't sure if we were going to get there in one piece.
Wow.
And he kept saying how that, you know, well, I'm from St. Louis, and you know, I spent a lot of time in Indianapolis, and, well, you know. He had a real sense of humor about it. He could tell I was squirming, and he would try to put me at ease. I think he was about 3 inches away from the bumper in front of us, going about 80 miles an hour. And then he'd whip around some car. And that was an amazing drive. And it was a great gig. But, I became more appreciative of being the one who drove to the gigs. You know, it's great to have all these great memories of him, you know, some of which are humorous, and most of which are just, like, just great memories of great music But of course, it's just so sad that he's gone. You know, he'll definitely be missed. Great musician and a great friend too.
Yeah, yeah. The only other thing I wanted to ask you: did he ever talk to you about his days in St. Louis? Did he talk to you about his time with Memphis Slim at all?
A little bit, sure. Some stories here and there. Yeah.
Anything you can recall off the top of your head?
Not so much.
Okay.
I mean, he just had so many things to say about all those years. I remember him talking about, I think when he was with Memphis Slim, he was, you know, pretty young, and he was working in Memphis. And there was a hotel there that had a club downstairs, and he mentioned that George Coleman, I think, was still maybe in his late teens, but was, he had a standing gig there at this place, like 6 or 7 nights a week, and he would do a matinee in the afternoon, and then an evening performance. And I think that they rotated bands and stuff, and so that's how they wound up running into each other and eventually playing together. And he just mentioned what a situation, you know, George had, because he lived upstairs and then went downstairs, did a gig, and went upstairs and practiced all day, and then went back down for the evening gig. And that was how he met him and how they became friends. And it's just a few years ago that they were both at Chris's Jazz Cafe at the same time, and it was great to see them, you know, run into each other after so many years, and talk about the old times and stuff.
All right. Well, Victor, this has been great. You've told some great stories, and, I can see that Edgar meant a lot to you, and that definitely came through. So I just want to thank you for taking the time to do this.
Oh, thanks. It was my pleasure.
All right. Thanks, Victor. I'll be seeing you soon, I'm sure.
Sounds good, Matt. Thank
you. Okay. Take care.
You too. Bye.
Saxophonist Victor North sharing some of his memories and thoughts about the late, great Edgar Bateman Jr. This is the special Edgar Bateman Memorial edition of Lucky Old Souls. We've been on the air since 11:30 this morning, going till about 8 or 8:30. We will see where things take us. Before we spoke to Victor, we heard two tracks from Bobby Zankel's 2008 Many in Body, One in Mind, including, as I said before, what I believe is the only recording of an Edgar Bateman composition. We heard the just stunning composition, Journey to Life.